Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
And our show tonight originating from two places around the world. I'm Paul Harris in our studios, which are really not studios. It's really a poker table in the poker room of the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, where the action is rocking and the 5-10 game is going. By the way, if you're a 5-10 player and can't make it here on Tuesday nights, we've gotten it going on Friday nights as of last week. So that'll be another chance for you to come down and join us and play in that game. They've also got the 1-3 game going on. They've got tournaments going on. They've got the 3-6 game going on. And it's always very busy here in the poker room at the Lumiere Place Casino. And before I tell you where Dennis is, a programming note, which is that 2 weeks from today, we are moving this show to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Now, obviously, this won't affect those of you who listen to the podcast, which you can download anytime on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. But as of Tuesday, October 13th, this show will be live in St. Louis on KFNS from 2 to 3 p.m., and we hope you'll join us then or continue to listen to the podcast on demand wherever you are. Now, where is Dennis? He is on the road at the World Series of Poker Europe, a major event going on in London. And it is something like 1 o'clock in the morning where he joins us now live. Hi, Dennis. How are you?
Heck, I'm having fun here. You're right. It's 1 o'clock in the morning here.
And this was actually day three.
In London, it's still lively and the whole bit. It's unbelievable. It's like noon at home, I think.
Well, this was day three of the main event, the 10,000 pound or 10,000 euro buy-in for the main event of the World Series of Poker. I think that it works out to about 15,000 U.S. dollars. Did you make it to day three?
About 17-3 on it, and I got knocked out at the very end of day two. I did not make it to day three.
So, tell me about your adventures in those first couple of days.
Oh, it's been fun over here. My trip back last year, this was one of the first major tournaments that I attended after the making it down to the November 9. Made it back here this year. Was able to play in the WSOP Europe, the first time I played there. And it was read like a who's who. There was 330 players in it, and you could hardly name a top pro that wasn't in the field somewhere. I mean, I sat down with everybody from Todd Bronson to Freddie D to David Williamson to you name it, and they were here on it. Tough tournament, but a very good one to play in.
Were you able to make any moves on these pros?
Actually, some of it, and there were some non-pros there, too. But the first table I got was fairly soft. I started with 30,000 in chips, ran it up to about 47. Then they busted my table. And I'm over here pleading with the director not to bust the table, but that it didn't carry much weight. I got moved to another table, and then a little bit after that, I got moved to one of the feature tables. And the feature table, every person around the room was a notable of some sort. And there were bracelet winners, there were W Coupe winners, there were people to play on Poker After Dark, you know, the whole bit. It was a tough, tough table, but yeah, again, it was fun. You like those challenges.
Speaking of the W Coupe, the guy who won the main event of the World Championship of Online Poker, Yevgeny Timoshenko, is still in this and at one point was the chip leader today. This is quite an accomplishment for back-to-back tournaments for this guy.
Oh, absolutely. It's so hard to do that, to run deep in back-to-back tournaments. For him to still be in there and still have a good chip stack, absolutely. He's playing very, very well.
Let me mention some of the other notables who are there. Doyle Brunson. And let's talk about Doyle for just a second here, because you and I have discussed the legend of Doyle Brunson so much. And, in fact, when we had Daniel Negreanu on the show a couple of weeks ago, he reinforced what you and I have been saying over the last several months. But when you and I saw Doyle this summer at the World Series of Poker in Las Vegas, he said, that's it, I'm just going to stick to cash games. I'm not going to play these big tournaments anymore, especially the main event here. I just don't have the stamina for it anymore. I'm almost 80 years old. And I could play cash games all night long and do very well in those. I don't want to have to do multi-day, all-day-long tournaments anymore. And boom, here he goes to London, and he's in the final 36 of the WSOPE. Pretty amazing.
Sometimes poker players are so sick. We love the game so much. We love the camaraderie. We love the challenge. Love the competition at the table. I'm telling you, Doyle, he just stirs his blood, I think, when he sits down at a table. I can't even imagine me at almost 80 years old being able to play at the high level that he plays at. It's just phenomenal that he can do that. My hat's off to him, the whole bit. Absolutely amazing that he can do this.
Others who have made it to day four tomorrow, that means they're in the final 36 of this tournament, besides Timoshenko and Doyle Brunson, Daniel Negreanu, David Devilfish Ulliott, who, by the way, a couple of weeks ago on the ESPN coverage of the main event of this year's World Series of Poker, was wearing one of Kevin Steffen's one-time T-shirts. I know Kevin was very happy to see that, yeah. Steve Solitow, who was a member of the Mayfair Club so many years ago with Howard Lederer and so many others. Barry Shulman, who was the guy behind Card Player magazine. His son, Jeff Shulman, is going to be one of the November 9 this year. Barry is still in there. And speaking of the November 9, two guys who are this year's November 9ers, the Frenchman Antoine Sout and James Aikenhead, are both left in there. Last year, of course, Ivan Demidov was in the November 9 with you and managed to make the final table, the WSOPE. All of these are major accomplishments for all of these people to run so deep.
But actually, I got a question for you, because I've been, and I'll tell you about it in a minute. I have some view about what I did today. Aikenhead was one of the chip leaders at one time. How did he finish today, or do you have that information?
I will check it right here. I've got the chip leader list, and let's see. At the top of the list is a guy named Matt Horolenko, and then you got to go down about four more to get to Barry Shulman, and Negreanu's in the middle of the pack. Timoshenko's in the middle of the pack. Aikenhead is he's down to about 153,000, and the chip leader has 700,000. So he's in the bottom third at this point. He must have taken a bad hit at some point. As a matter of fact, in his last hand, he lost 76,000. So he was up to about 2.25 before that last one.
Okay. And the other November Niner, is he there where you can see too?
Antoine Sout is. Let me see if I can find him here. He's kind of in the middle of the pack right now.
Okay. Well, he's still. The thing of it is, the key thing is he's still in it.
Yeah, he's got 202,000.
That's a major accomplishment with the quality of players that they got there on this. So my kudos to those guys for doing well on this one. Hopefully, they
last year's
money.
Last year's WSOPE winner, Annette Oberstad, who, by the way, just turned 21 a couple of weeks ago. She made it to day three, but got knocked out today. Other notables who are still in there, Min Nguyen and Liz Liu and Jason Mercier. So that's all I have off the chip count. And since you weren't in day three, tell me what your day was like not playing in the main event today.
Well, I went over to the that's being held at the Empire Casino on it. The Victoria Casino is sort of the host of the EPT. That's been going on some of the satellites and everything like that for the last week or two over here. So I went over to the Victoria Casino, found out that they were having a satellite into the High Roller event that starts tomorrow on it. There's a 2,500-pound buy-in, so, you know, $4,000 basically to buy into this. They ended up with 32 people, so they have three seats that they awarded on it. So I sat down at 4 o'clock this afternoon, which was 9 hours ago, and started playing, and I finished about an hour ago, and I got one of the seats.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was pretty some tough competition over here because of the way they play over here in Europe. But, I survived with a couple of other notables, and it was fun. And whenever you win, you can always be happy. I actually ended up the chip leader at the end when the fourth person was eliminated, narrowed down just the three of us.
And this is an event that last year, the EPT High Roller event, where the final table was 9, and I don't know if they paid 9 or if it was just the final table that were 9, but you bubbled it and came in 10th, right?
Oh, yeah, and this reminded me of that. Yes, they paid 9.
I'm sorry.
I got,
I wasn't rubbing it in. I was just trying to help
a number of hours of playing and got absolutely nothing for it.
Now, you said that the play over there is different, and we're going to talk about that a little bit with the poker coach, Joe McGowan, in a few minutes. But tell me about how it was different for you.
Well, it's just there are some interesting play over here. They're willing to make moves and very complicated moves over here. Had several of them made against me. They also are just unafraid. My gosh, I can relate hand after hand after hand where people are literally just throwing chips in the middle, daring you to call them. And a good portion of the time, they had absolutely nothing. I won a major hand. I doubled up over here when a guy had a king-high nothing on it and shoved on the river. You know, the old saying about, you know, taking your shots, you know,
yep.
First one you shoot in the head, the second one in your foot, and the third one in your head. This guy put one right between his eyes because he was gone.
Well, interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the strategy, about how you play guys like that who are pushing and pushing and pushing, and you can never be sure whether they have something or not. And, of course, the more often that they show that they don't have something, you're probably more likely to call. But every poker player knows that experience of sitting down on a table with a hyper-aggressive player, sometimes a maniac, sometimes not, and they show nothing, and they show nothing, and they show nothing, and then, of course, when you push back, that's when they have the nuts.
Well, of course, and we've all been in that situation, let me tell you. But that's where somebody like Joe is so vital, because he has such good leads on people and being able to tell what they're doing and being able to help other people to understand that. If you can get just small little clues, if you can see in their mannerism and the way they bet and the amount they bet and, you know, the whole bit like that, it helps you so much in being able to make that tough, tough call. And you just, frankly, these guys will put you to the test, and you will have to make that tough call. You know, this guy shoved, basically, he's putting me all in. I had about a third of my chips in, and all of a sudden on the river, here it comes. The third spade hits the board, and he instantly shoves. You know, of course, I already had a boat, so, you know, it didn't make a whole lot of difference to me about the spade.
Oh, yeah, you had a real tough decision. Please on the flush, please on the flush, please on the flush.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm sitting there going, okay, I hope he got, and I expect him to turn over two spades. He had a king, ten of clubs.
Wow.
Didn't even have a pair. But, you know, the move was there, and I got to give the guy that. If I had not had a boat, I really would have had a hard time calling. You know, if I had two pair, or even top set. That third spade hit, and here comes his chips flying at you.
Dennis, I have seen people playing like that in tournaments early on, particularly in the World Series events that I played this summer, and you and I and Joe have talked about how people have been getting more aggressive because they feel like they have to chip up early. When you were playing against these guys today in this satellite for the EPT high roller event, were they doing that just at the beginning and then settling down a little bit, or were they pushing and pushing and pushing all day?
They really were pushing all the way till we made it to the final table. Everybody seems to be of the opinion that since there are only three seats being awarded, you can't limp around. You've got to get aggressive. You've got to get a massive amount of chips to go to that final table. And I don't necessarily agree with that philosophy. But let me tell you, there's an awful lot of them that were there, and they say, well, I'm not going to limp around. I'm either going to get a lot of chips or I'm going to go play a cash game. Well, I'll see you at the cash game.
Well, you're not going to have much time for cash games because you played a couple of days of the main event, and then you played the qualifier today. Tomorrow you'll be in the high roller. Is that a one-day event?
Two-day. It's a two-day event. Last year we had 86 people in it and very, very high qualified or quality players on it. This year, and I don't know the exact structure, they said they changed the structure a little bit and they increased our starting chips. I think they're most of these tournaments are raising the starting chips simply to compensate for the aggressive play. You know, they give you more chips to play with on it. And it's going to be fun. Just walking around the hotel here in the last little bit, I ran into Greg Raymer. I ran into Leo Fernandez. I've run into a ton of these other pros that have come here just to play the high roller and the EPT. It's going to be tough.
The main event of the EPT, I believe, starts on Thursday, so you might have a little bit of overlap between the high roller event and the main event, right?
Well, yeah, but there's a day 1A and 1B. If you're on day 2 of the high roller, you can still play day 2 of the main event, and you're okay.
Oh, so instead of starting Thursday in the main event, you would start Friday?
Correct.
Gotcha. So, how many people will there be in the EPT main event this year?
I don't know. My best guess, we were actually talking about it, somewhere around 600 people. 650. There'll be more in that than there were in the EPT London, or EPT Europe. Sorry, I can't even talk. WSOP Europe. There we go.
All right.
330 there. We'll probably have twice that many in the EPT.
Any other adventures you want to share with us before we bring in Joe?
A ton of things. We can bring Joe in and talk about it. Just London is quite a bit different. Let me tell you something. If you're a pedestrian here, beware of the cabs. These guys are nuts. I'm in the back seat literally wanting to put blindfolds on so I don't have to watch them.
See, I've always thought that the British cab drivers, the London cab drivers, had the best reputation in the world because of all the testing they have to go through to get to wherever they need to get to. But, yeah, they can be a little bit reckless sometimes, I guess.
Oh, my gosh. You know, they're zinging at 30 mile an hour through a thing that has about an inch gap on each side. You know,
yep.
And guys standing by the road, if they literally would sneeze and lean forward, they'd probably be hit by a mirror. Because they're zinging right through there. Away you go.
Yeah. All right, listen, I got to take a commercial break. Are you going to stick around and we'll have Joe and you both on the phone?
Yep, that'll work.
Okay, good. We'll take a break and we'll come back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm in St. Louis at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel, where, by the way, they've got a show here called Legends in Concert, where they do seven shows a week. Tonight's a dark night for them, but they'll be on tomorrow. And they do the shows Wednesday through Sunday at 7 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m., and through October 11th, they've got performers who do Elton John and Janet Jackson and Lionel Richie and Madonna and the Blues Brothers. And then about every month or so, they change it and bring in different performers who do all sorts of other stars. It's an amazing show, and it's just $15. You can get your tickets in advance at Ticketmaster or at the gift shop here at Lumiere Place. Another show you may want to put on your calendar is November 13th at the Lumiere Theater. Travis Tritt, not an imitator, but the man himself, will be here. Tickets for that show are on sale now. There are just a few seats left. So that's what's coming up here at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. We're back with Dennis Phillips in London, along with Joe the Poker Coach McGowan. And later on, Dan Cipra from Poker News Daily will fill us in on what's happening with the legal side of poker. All here on the Lumiere Place Final Table. Our podcast available on thechipleader.com and live here on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net. So you want to be a poker player. Well, I'm telling you, the best way to do that is to download PokerStars.net and start your practicing, because right there, guys, that's where I'm at. That's where a lot of people start. That's where you're going to learn the game. If you want to be successful at this, go to PokerStars.net, download the software, start playing. It's great, 24/7, any kind of game and at any kind of level. PokerStars.net, guys. Find the poker star in you.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the show. Reminder, you can email us, DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. You can follow Dennis online as he tweets. His Twitter name there is Dennis_Phillips. Mine is Paul Harris Show. And Joe McGowan is on there as Joe Poker Coach. You can follow us all on Twitter that way. Dennis and Joe are both in London for the World Series of Poker Europe and for the EPT London, which starts tomorrow with the high roller event that Dennis has qualified for. And Joe, how are you doing? How's your London trip going so far?
I'm doing great, Paul. Very good. Dennis and I are having a blast over here.
Now, you are not playing in any of the tournaments. You're just taking some cash out of the English economy, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm doing quite well, having a lot of fun. Actually reminds me, when you started the show tonight, you said how Tuesdays you had the 5-10, and on Fridays now you're starting the 5-10. The only thing you forgot to say was, with you and Dennis in the game, to please bring a lot of money.
Yeah, we have plenty of guys who are bringing plenty of money to the game. But it's a $1,000 minimum, and anybody's welcome to sit in on the game. What have you been playing?
It's a funny thing over here. My sleep schedule is such a mess, and last year I was over here as well, and I had a pretty easy time of it. I adjusted almost immediately. So I'm taking these little weird naps and, you know, sleeping during the day and at night for an hour and a half and waking up and watching TV for 2 hours and then going place in the cash game. But sometimes I'll go over there and there'll be a little game going and there's only one game and it's like five-handed. And it's a smaller game, I guess it would be equivalent to a 2-5 game back home. And it's an interesting thing. You know, you sit down on that game, everybody's trying to make a living out of that game or really taking it serious. And everybody in that game is very, very knowledgeable. As opposed to back home, you know, where I play in the Indian casinos, I might have a school teacher, you know, just kind of having fun and maybe a retired guy, you know, killing time and decent, you know, but just having a good time, but not very knowledgeable in general with poker, as opposed to here is really the opposite. It's pretty interesting. And then throughout the day, the casino starts to fill up, and then I'll move up in games a couple of steps and play 10-20. I'm pretty comfortable in here because the games play pretty big.
Well, Dennis was talking before, Joe, about how in the tournament today, the English and European players were very, very aggressive. Did you find them that way in the cash games as well?
Well, I definitely did. I mean, I think it's almost a tribute to Doyle Brunson. You know, you and Dennis were talking about Doyle a little bit. The game constantly changes, and that's one of the fun things about it. And that's how, you know, to me, it's amazing how Doyle at his age, not only with his age, just having the skill and ability to be his age and play well still and have his wits about him, but to keep up with how the game keeps changing. And, of course, we've talked about on the show in some of my segments how, you know, a lot of guys now are 3-betting and 4-betting and, you know, this guy's doing this and all these different elaborate plays. And over here there's quite a bit of that. And it's extremely aggressive, much, much more so than back home. For instance, when I play in one of the starter games, the smaller games, back home it would pretty much go limp, limp. Another guy limps, and now this guy, well, I'll limp. And then the small blind comes in and the big blind checks. Well, here, it might go limp, and then it's going to be raised, and then the guy on the button is going to, you know, 3-bet it, and then everyone's to a decision. So pretty much there's almost no limping any hand, any sized game that I've found so far. Now, it's possible that, you know, I'm in a small sample size, and because of the tournaments here, and that's not how it normally is. I feel, in a way, I'm complimenting the players here. But for me, it's made it quite a bit easier to actually make a lot of money because I get to play, you know, I hope I play at a pretty high level, but I want to say ABC pro-style poker where I tighten up quite a bit and let these guys bluff off to me and pay me off, you know, when I have it. So I try to play really, really solid. I try not to get involved a lot. I try not to limp a lot with marginal hands because it's going to get popped and repopped. And I'm able to really sit back, play a low-risk game, and I've had an exceptional trip so far, basically every single session that I've played. And, you know, coupled with running a little bit good has helped as well, for sure.
All right, let me ask you, in your role as poker coach, for our listeners who do like to play in games where they want to get in there with suited connectors like a 5-6 of diamonds, a 7-8 of spades, something like that, and then, you know, try to see a flop, particularly if they're in late position, and they're trying to get in for as little as possible and, you know, try to use those odds in their favor with 3, 4, maybe 5 players in there. If you're playing at a hyper-aggressive table, does that mean that you can't play that many hands like that?
Well, I think it's just you need to play, you have to gamble a little bit more. You know, I many times I've limped in there with kings and it doesn't work out. You know, I limp in with jacks and then it comes an ace and a queen and, you know, I got to throw it away. But once in a while, you know, you'll limp with the kings and then it does get raised and re-raised and another guy calls. And then you get to pop it again and they think you're bluffing and you would have raised the first time around. And the 5-6s and the king jacks and stuff like that, you know, when you get close to closing the betting in the big blind or maybe the small blind or you have a little bit of a read that the guy to your left is not going to raise and he is in the big blind, that might be where you might be able to come in if it's a small raise. Because basically, I'm telling you, Paul, over here, every pot, it's been raised pre-flop. pretty much. I mean, there's just very, very few hands that you're limping in and seeing cheap flops with. So, you know, you got to be careful. I always love playing all my pocket pairs. You know, it's great when you flop sets and you hit funny straights because flushes are easy for people to read and it's tougher to get paid with flushes out there. So, you know, the sets and the straights are where it's at. But you just, you gotta try to trap a little bit more and be a little bit more patient. You know, the cool thing is, I feel like I can play no hands for 20 minutes, half an hour, and I play a hand, I'm still getting paid. You know, these guys just gamble it up over here, and they try to push you around. And if you can show, you know, a little weakness and maybe send off some subtle reverse tells of weakness and make it a sincere-looking cry call when you actually have it, you know, you get paid pretty good. So it's, you know, it's a kind of a different way for me to play because I'm used to trying to be the more aggressive player and kind of take over the table sometimes when I play, majority of times when I play in a comfortable game that I'm used to. But here I'm just sitting back, and, you know, trying not to play too many of the five sixes and king jacks because I don't want to, you know, have to put in a big call of a raise or a re-raise. So I let a lot of those go.
Joe, I got a question from one of our Twitter followers today, listener by the name of Art, who says he's been over there in London and has played aggressive, and it fits right into what we're talking about here because he's a cash game player as well. And he wonders whether in situations like that it's better to buy in short. I think what he means is sit down at the table with the minimum. If it's a $1,000 minimum at a table or a $500 minimum at a table, buy in short and play that rather than buying in for a bigger stack. Does the strategy of how to play against aggressive players match up with that kind of thinking?
That's a really good thing. And, you know, I think it definitely depends upon your bankroll and how comfortable you are. But just strategy-wise, even if you had an unlimited bankroll and your purpose is to really try to make money, it's really not a terrible idea to go in there a little bit on the short side. And, you know, you can maybe try to even limp with like an ace-king where these guys are three-betting nowadays so light, you might be able to come back over the top all in because you're relatively short and likely have the best hand. Coupled, again, with a little bit of a read always helps to have you be more confident. But, you know, I got put to the test with Queens the other night in a game with Dennis, and I did have a little bit of a read. And, a guy had limped in and played it similarly the way before, and I actually bought into that particular game a little bit short to what I normally would because you know, I've been playing almost every night and sometimes two or three sessions a day here and there. Come home, take little naps, as I said, and I recognized a couple of the players in this game from games before that I had played, extremely aggressive, huge bluffing players. So I did exactly what you just said in the email viewer had asked. I bought him a little bit short because I knew I'd be put into these spots and be forced to make some tough calls and some tough plays, and I don't want to do it when I'm super, super deep. And I want them to feel like they can push me around when in actuality, you know, I'm playing them exactly for that, and it's worked out quite well.
All right, one last question, and either Dennis or Joe can answer this one. A listener named Amy emailed saying, I know you're in London, and I wonder if it's different trying to get tells off of English players than it is off American players. Now, Dennis, of course, you played in the World Series of Poker against people from all sorts of different countries, as have you, Joe. Does it matter to you the nationality of the person across the table when you're looking for tells?
Actually, it doesn't to me. There is a little bit of a difference. There are generic tells, whatever it is, whether the heavy breathing, the this, the that, or something. It's cross-gender and it's cross-nationality and the whole bit. But I will admit that maybe Latin American players have a tendency to play their aces stronger and stick with them more. European players, some of the Scandinavian ones, get very, very aggressive and love to open the bidding and, you know, three and four bet from early position, even with mediocre hands. Or I think I'm even kind to them sometimes when I say mediocre hands on it. You know, so it does, I guess, knowing the nationality does help. One of the things that Daniel Negreanu tries to do when he sits down at a table is engage everybody and talk and find out where they're from and find out what their background is. Because, again, then you have a generic type of a platform that you can put somebody on. You know, is this a grandmother from Dubuque or is it this internet player that's coming from Scandinavian country? And immediately that would help you before you ever see them play a hand, where you can try to get an idea of what type of play they may be doing on it. Daniel's very good about engaging people in talk and doing that on it. And I think it does help him out, because a lot of times there's nothing worse than to sit down at either the first table of a tournament, or what's even worse is your table needs to get busted. You go to a brand new table, you sit down with eight people that you've never played a hand with before, and you get some middle hand that can be so dangerous. You get those pocket tens. You get that ace queen, and you have somebody betting into you, and you got to make instant decisions on it.
Yep.
So a generic setup, how this person stacks his chips, how he is dressed, how he speaks or her speaks, where they're from. All those things can help you out and give you at least a little bit more, maybe, of an edge that you wouldn't have had if you didn't notice those things.
All right, guys, I'm going to let you go. Thank you very much. Dennis, good luck in the high roller event tomorrow. And Joe, continued good luck in the cash games. Dennis will go from the high roller event into the EPT main event this weekend. And when we move the show to our new 2 o'clock time slot on October 13th, we'll all be back here stateside and be able to share more tales of their trip to Europe. Good luck to you guys. Thanks for checking in from there.
Thanks, Paul.
All right. Take care, Paul.
That's Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan, both live from London here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS. Now, before we bring in our guest, a word about one-time apparel. I mentioned earlier that David Devilfish Ulliott was wearing one of the one-time T-shirts at the main event this summer, and he got caught on camera just a couple of weeks ago on ESPN. Not caught on camera in a bad way, but in a good way, because it was a little free publicity for Kevin Steffen and the folks who make the one-time T-shirts and hats and jerseys and sweatshirts. And as we head into the fall and the winter, Kevin has told me that he's going to be selling a lot more of the hoodies, both pull-up and zip-up. You can find them all on the website, onetimeapparel.com. You can find sports shirts and baseball shirts and polo shirts and T-shirts and hats, too. And they've got special stuff for ladies and sexy stuff and standard poker stuff. This is the poker apparel for every poker player. OneTimeApparel.com. Go there, see the variety of things you can order, charge them to your credit card or put them on PayPal, and Kevin will give a portion of the proceeds to various charity organizations, and he supports the American economy by using local vendors in everything he does. So that's Kevin Steffen and his company, One Time Apparel, online at onetimeapparel.com. We're proud to have him as a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. Now, Dan Cypra is on the phone. Dan is a reporter for Poker News Daily, who's been writing lately about the legal side of the struggle to keep poker legal everywhere and fight back against those who have made it illegal in so many places. Dan, thanks for making time to join me tonight.
Thank you very much. I can use some of that poker apparel because it's so cold here tonight.
Where are you tonight?
I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and it's probably in the 50s here, which is really cold for my blood.
Yeah, there's been a cold front that's moved through the Midwest in the last couple of days and into the South as well. You have been covering the fight in the courts lately. Tell me what you've seen and what you've been reporting on about the fight to keep poker legal or make it legal where it isn't.
Well, the big news that we've all been following is a lawsuit by the Interactive Media Entertainment and Gaming Association, which is called IMEGA for short. IMEGA sued to declare the UIGEA, which is the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, which is that 2006 law that Bill Frist ushered through Congress, trying to declare it unconstitutional. Although the court disagreed with most of their points, they ended up saying that internet gambling now ultimately may be a state's rights issue, just like how the land-based version is treated. So that's kind of a big story that we've been developing and following in the industry. I don't think anybody really understands quite yet how the court's decision, which was the Third Circuit Court of Appeal, will impact the industry, but there's only one way to find out, so we'll be reporting on it.
Now, as I understand it, one of the things that the court said was this is not a federal issue, but it's more of a state issue. Does that mean that the 50 state legislatures across the country, the ones who have decided whether to legalize gambling in brick-and-mortar casinos, will now have a chance to decide whether online poker is legal in their states?
All signs seem to point to that. There really hasn't been a lot of movement on the issue since that news broke about 3 weeks ago. However, the court did say that the UIGEA does not in itself make anything illegal, and what would make internet gambling illegal is whether a person's state declared it was illegal and the place that the betting company was located in also said it was legal. So as long as it's legal in both jurisdictions, all signs point to it being legal overall. However, as I said, there's been no movement on it, so it's kind of hard to tell how it will actually be implemented.
Where are we with the Barney Frank bill and the Bob Menendez bill in Congress?
Well, with the Barney Frank bills, there's two of them. One is H.R. 2266, which basically delays the regulations of the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act from being implemented until at least December 1st, 2010. Essentially, it pushes them back 1 year. It's up to 43 co-sponsors, which is a pretty large number in the House of Representatives. However, as you'll notice from my comment that I just made, it has to basically be acted on before December 1st of this year. Otherwise, it's a moot bill. I talked to John Pappas, who's the executive director of the PPA, the Poker Players Alliance, today, who said that the organization is actually working through other avenues besides just legislation in order to delay the regulations of the UIGEA. And one of those avenues could be actually appealing directly to the Treasury in order to go ahead and delay them. So that's one option that the poker industry has been really fighting for. The other one is H.R. 2267, which was introduced back in May and basically establishes a complete licensing and regulatory framework for internet gambling in the United States. It's up to 58 co-sponsors, so it's another big, you know, industry push that we've all been trying to do.
But if nothing is done by December 1st, then things get really screwy, right?
Well, There's been some debate as to whether anything would actually change. The regulations were approved back in November as part of the Midnight Rules by the outgoing Bush administration. They were officially signed on January 19th. This was the day before Barack Obama took office. And when you talk to people like gambling expert I. Nelson Rose and some other industry veterans, people kind of wonder what effect the regulations actually going into effect will have. Some have said that, you know, the credit card companies are already made moves to adjust themselves, so it remains to be seen what will happen, but I think as that, you know, deadline grows closer, everybody in the industry starts to get a little bit more worrisome as to what will actually happen.
Now, what's interesting to me is while all of this is going on, companies like Harrah's are really gearing up to get into the interactive gaming business. Harrah's Interactive has been hiring people and working on a framework and putting together software to make things go. I suppose Right. Most of that is probably going to work in Europe for them first, and that will expand the World Series of Poker brand worldwide even more than they already have with the WSOP Europe and all the European players who come here every summer, right?
Exactly. Harrah's Interactive Entertainment is based in Canada. Jeffrey Pollock is one of the main people working in it, who's the WSOP commissioner. It remains to be seen kind of where they'll expand, but I think given the fact that they're not publicly traded, but they're a big enough company in the United States that I don't see them going to the U.S. market anytime soon until it's explicitly legal for them to do so. Otherwise, they actually would risk all of their land-based casino licenses as well. But yeah, going into Europe and places where it's legal, like, you know, England and places like that, I think it's completely foreseeable. The question that players have had is what will be the new logo requirements if the Harrah's Interactive actually makes their own online poker room? Will somebody like Dennis Phillips be able to bring his PokerStars logo to the World Series, given that it's owned and operated by essentially an online poker site?
Something as a matter of fact,
for the future.
Matter of fact, Phil Hellmuth said in a recent interview that he thinks a battle could be brewing. He says that Harrah's and the WSOP could be in a very tough position, and that Harrah's, if they launch their online poker site, could start flexing their muscles and tell other people, you can't wear, Dennis, your PokerStars logo, or anybody who wears a Full Tilt logo, or Phil Hellmuth with his Ultimate Bet logo. And that could really make, for instance, PokerStars increase the EPT and the other events that they want to get forward, going forward, as competitors for the WSOP, and it could really change the whole marketplace.
I mean, I wouldn't want to have Phil Hellmuth against me on anything, but yeah, he's been one of the more vocal people on the other side of the coin. You also wonder, what would the World Poker Tour do? They used to have a for-profit online poker room and casino under, I believe it was the Micro Gaming Network. However, that closed earlier this year and sent people over, I believe, to InterPoker. So they've actually been in this marketplace before, but they didn't, you know, accept U.S. users, so something that the, you know, the whole industry will be keeping an eye on of what, you know, Harrah's next move will be, but it's too large of a entity that they have to make any really great movements like not allowing logos.
Dan, I appreciate your time tonight. Thanks for your work, and thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Have a nice night.
Dan Cypher, who's a reporter for PokerNewsDaily.com. By the way, Poker Stars not only sponsors Dennis Phillips, but is also a sponsor of this show. And a reminder that you can go to PokerStars.net and play for free. It's absolutely perfectly legal. Poker Stars is still attracting hundreds of thousands of people. In fact, recently shattered their own world record for hosting the most players in an internet poker room. The previous record was broken by over 100,000 players. On Sunday, September 6th, 307,016 players were online at 42,814 tables, all at the same moment on PokerStars. If anybody thinks that the legal system is putting a dent in online poker, they are making a huge mistake here. And we're happy to have PokerStars as one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back with a discussion that I had with Dennis and Joe about a hand that I played in a cash game where I just played it absolutely wrong. It'll be a learning experience for you right after this on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. Guys, this is the watch that I wear. I wear it day in, day out, 7 days a week, and whatever I'm doing, it makes no difference. If I'm out on the golf course, if I want to hit a wiffle ball against Oral Hershiser, I can wear my Reactor watch and not worry about it.
Yeah.
This thing is so durable, it's amazing.
Not only that, it takes your strenuous activity of lifting chips and throwing them into the pot at a live game.
Yeah.
Or clicking online.
It's amazing. But these guys, they ultimately and unconditionally guarantee this watch that it is the best watch in there, and if anything ever happens, they will fix it for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And everywhere I go, I don't care whether it's a tournament, whether it's a friendly game, everybody asks me about the watch. I have taken this off my wrist so many times to hand it to people. It's amazing. It's a gorgeous watch. Guys, if you do not have it or you do want a watch, go to reactorwatches.com. It's absolutely phenomenal, the watches they have there. You need to go there. Reactorwatches.com. Pick out your watch. It's great, guys.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Let me ask you about a hand I played recently that I thought about for quite a while after I played the hand. And I'll tell you right up front, it's because I lost the hand.
I love it, guys.
Well, I don't know about you, but the hands that I play well and win,
right?
I tend to go, okay, those are my chips, thank you very much, and we move on to something else.
Right.
You tend to go, your regrets are about the ones where, oh, could I have played that better? Anyway, here's what the hand was.
You and the rest of the whole poker world.
Yeah. I'm playing in a 5-10 game, and there's a guy who is in late position who, when he's in late position, raises almost every time, whether he's on the button or in the cutoff. He raises almost every time he's in that position.
Every time it's limped to him or even re-raises?
Limped to him. That could be one player, two player, three players.
He's going to raise it.
He's going to raise it up.
Okay.
However, he varies the amount that he raises, not necessarily based on how many other players are in there, how many people limped into him, but on the strength of his hand. And I noticed this over the course of an hour of watching this guy.
Okay.
If he had a hand, he would make the fairly standard $40 or $50 raise. If he didn't have a hand, he would make it $80, sometimes $90.
And you're seeing this confirmed.
Seeing this confirmed.
It's a cash game, and you're getting a lot of hands, and he's playing most of them, so you get to see him a lot.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Every time it goes around, he is probably he's got three raising positions, and two out of those three, he's raising it every time.
Go ahead, Dennis.
And you're sitting where in relation to him?
In this position, I was under the gun plus one.
Okay,
so it's big blind, another player, and then me.
Right.
How many chips do you have?
I probably have about 2,300 at this point, and he has somewhere around 1,400 or 1,500. Okay?
This is a game where there's a maximum buy-in of $1,500.
Has he been winning or losing, this guy?
He's been going kind of sideways because he's playing a lot of pots. He goes up, he goes down. He goes up, he goes down. All right. I'm under the gun plus one. I look down on Ace of Hearts. Ace of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts. Ace of Diamonds, Jack of Hearts. I know there's going to be a late raise. I just limp. One other guy limps behind me. It comes around to the razor, as I call him, and he makes it $80. That's the standard. I don't really have a big hand. I'm trying to steal move by this guy. The small blind folds, the big blind folds, it comes back to me. I decide I'm going to call because I read him as weak. The other limper folds. So now we're going to go heads up, and there's $180 in the pot. I'm forgetting about the small blind, which is going to the house.
Close enough.
Right. So there's $180 in the pot, and the flop comes out.
Wait a second.
Yeah?
Sorry. Okay, well, can I just give my thought from here?
Absolutely.
From this point? Okay.
Or do you want to hear the whole hand, and then we can go back and you can tell me what you think I did wrong?
I'll go now.
Okay.
I'll go now.
He can't wait. Jump right on me, Joe.
Well, you know, Ace Jack, it's not a trapping hand. You know, if you're doing it because you know this guy's going to raise you and then you're going to have the best hand, it may not be that great. You know, if you had aces there and this guy's going to raise and you want to gamble and let him bet and you know, see the flop with whatever the heck he's raising with, sounds like any two.
Or if I had sixes and I'm hoping to catch a six.
Catch a six and then just let it go. Yeah. I would love the sixes, you know, and then the implied odds for the 80 at 70 more. But to just call, you know, if you know right there, I think you need to probably, if you really trust that read, if you're being brutally honest and you know he's got nothing, he's doing this with any two, I have the best hand, I'm up front, I limped, I can represent even a bigger hand than the ace-jack, although I know the ace-jack is better than what he has right now, I'd probably try to pick the pot up right there. I don't think I would have done that. I might have limped in for 10. You know, with ace-jack, maybe in a cash game, I'm playing a lot of pots. If I'm playing a 5-10 game, because I think I can outplay people and get away from hands, so I might limp in with that or even raise or, you know. But I don't think it's a good trapping hand. I probably think you should have re-raised him right there and made it 280 if you think he'd respect you and you think that would work.
Yep.
If you think this guy's a crazy jackal nut and now he's going to re-raise you, you know, then I would have just throw it away even from the get-go and not get involved with the ace-jack.
The guy was not a maniac. He was just a guy who liked to play a lot of pots.
Okay. So I would say right there, then you probably should have raised it and taken it there.
There's over $100 in the pot other than your money out there. If you read him as weak and everything like that, you know, a limp raise like that, I read as a strong hand. Yeah, I could see a raise there very easily.
Yeah, and you're
but
raising,
not a mid-raise. You got to make it a big enough raise to push him out of it.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, too, the flop comes out, who knows what, and now he's got any two cards. This guy could have 7-8. He could have any two cards. You know, I talked other times in the past where I've played all these wacky hands like everybody else. He could have king deuce.
Yep.
And the flop comes out ace king deuce or who knows what.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Because you'll never know where you're at with this guy. Almost no matter what you flop, unless you flop, you know, gin, which is a one in a million.
Well,
right?
the only time I know where I am with this guy is when he makes it 40 or 50 as the raise. I know he's got a big hand. That's what he always did. But he made it 80, and I just called. I didn't raise. I agree with you. That's mistake number one. Mistake number one was playing this hand for more than $10 or less than $280. You know, you're exactly right. Yeah. That's where the range should have been. I called. The flop comes out, jack, 10, deuce, all diamonds. So I have flopped top pair with not only the ace kicker, but the nut flush redraw, because I've got the ace of diamonds. Ace of diamonds, jack of hearts.
Well, the nut flush draw.
What did I say?
Redraw.
The nut flush draw. Right. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Right. I slipped into Omaha mode there for a second. Okay. Excuse me.
All right. Oh, you've got to feel good then.
I feel good.
All right.
I check.
Okay.
All right. He bets 140, almost pot-sized bet.
Okay.
I just call. Mistake number two, right?
No. Well, what do you, Dennis? You look like
I would have raised again. Yeah. I would have found out where I'm at.
Yep.
I think it's cheaper to raise there and find out for sure where you're at. The other option you have then is to go ahead and just smooth call and wait for the diamond to come or the ace to come or something where you know you've got it. But I like finding out where I'm at. That's where Joe and I differ a little bit.
Yeah.
Joe would have liked to have seen another card for cheap on that.
And I feel like, you know, if I know this guy has nothing, if that's your read even still, mm-hmm. even after the flop and you pick up a little more read on him, that he still has nothing.
Yep.
The problem is in poker, one of the phrases is you're never as far as ahead as you think you are. You know, you didn't flop a full house.
Right.
Yeah. You flopped a pair of jacks with an ace kicker.
I didn't even flop the nut flush.
Right. And you have a draw. So if your read is wrong pre-flop and he has two kings, you're in big trouble, and now you need to hit a diamond.
He doesn't have two kings because of his pre-flop race.
To 80.
Again,
to 80.
Right.
To 80,
I'm 100% sure. Okay. He does not have aces. Right, well, he does not have kings. He does not have queens.
But sometimes you're wrong. I mean, sometimes I'm wrong. Sometimes you're pretty sure.
He could have jack 10 there, though.
Okay, he could have jack 10. He could have, if he's this crazy type of player, raising with any 2 to 80, he could have a goofy 2 pair.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you're now going to feel you really have a trapping hand and you're going to let this guy hang himself a little, you could just call if you want to gamble, knowing that his jack 8, you know, or king jack or whatever it is, he could then hit 2 pair on you, and now you might be in trouble.
Right.
That's the gamble.
Yeah,
so Dennis is saying raise, take the pot down right there.
Exactly.
And I'm saying you can. I like that play too.
Yeah.
But if you want to gamble, you know, then you could just call.
I look on it. You got a suit of connectors in there. He could have an 8-9. He could have a queen 9 with this guy knowing what it is.
Mm-hmm.
He could have, again, 2 diamonds, small suit of connectors.
No, he doesn't have 2 diamonds. There's 3 on the board.
Okay. All right. Good enough. But you don't know what he has. I just don't like the question mark there on it. I would rather throw the money out there and see where we go.
Well, let me ask you. In this situation, remember, I checked.
Right.
He bet.
Oh, I check raise is what I'm saying.
Oh, you do check raise.
I do check raise.
You don't bet out on the
No, I
flop?
Don't, because if he is going to give me a freebie, I'll take it. But once he makes the initial bet, then I want to find out where I'm at, and I come over the top.
Okay. All right. I called the 140. Okay.
I can see both.
Yeah.
I can totally see both.
Oh, I can too.
What I'm saying is if you do just call, you have to be able to accept that if the diamond doesn't come, which is only, what, 30-some-odd percent,
mm-hmm.
that maybe, you know, you might get drawn out on,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
well,
just have a pair of jacks.
Exactly. And what I'm saying is if you don't re-raise, if you just call, you got to be ready to lay the hand down too.
Yeah. All right. The turn is 4 of clubs. Okay? It doesn't change the hand at all. We've got jack, 10, deuce of diamonds out there and the 4 of clubs. I check.
Okay.
Intending to check call. He checks behind me.
Okay.
What does this tell you?
Well, you know, if this guy's an aggressive player, he's usually not going to check there, you know, hardly anything. You know,
it tells me if he'd have raised previously, he would have folded probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have definitely folded if he would have raised the flop.
Now we're taking jack 10 off the board,
correct.
Et cetera.
Correct.
We don't want to put
right.
him on 2 pair. We don't put him on a set.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Because he'd be building the pot.
It's likely my pair of jacks with an ace kicker is the best hand
at
right
that
now.
Point,
at that point,
it's extremely
true.
Likely
true.
You have
very
the best
true.
Hand.
Okay. The river is the 7 of spades. Once again, I check, and he bets, and now there's a $460 pot there. He bets 3.25.
What does he look like?
Hard to say. Didn't really have a good read on him at that point.
Dennis,
see,
do you want
see,
to go?
That's the reason why I would have made the bet on the flop, is to find out where I am, because it would have been cheaper to do it there than
absolutely.
Now. Then, because you felt you were good, then the river card comes. My God, is it possible he had an 8-9? You know, I mean, you don't think so or anything. Did he have jack 7? Did he have, you know, pure junk? Did he have a pair of 7s?
Did he really
did he
have
pocket 7s?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I said. Did he
Who
have
knows
a pair
what
of
7s?
Right.
So now you don't know, but there's enough money in it.
At this point, the way you played the hand, I think you got to cry call.
Probably,
we know you lost.
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean, we know you didn't raise the river for value.
I did not raise. I just called.
He had to have something, but I would have called
yep.
if I played the hand the way you did.
I probably would have. I would have hated it, but I probably would have. You almost trapped yourself into it.
Because it's that player, and
right.
you can beat a lot of hands that he would
sure.
bluff the river or even bet for value. You might bet for value king-jack if you were wrong and actually had somewhat of a hand.
Well, yeah, king-jack, queen-jack, because you checked it. You know,
yeah,
maybe you enticed it,
yep.
in which case you did play it right, but I just can't see him doing that.
Well, when you were talking about his possible hands, you named the hand that he had.
8-9.
8-9 of clubs.
Yeah, see, that's what I was afraid of.
Yeah.
So That's one of the reasons why, after that came out there, I would have re-raised him on the
This
block.
Is exactly what I was saying to myself for the next 20 minutes. you ever do that when you're sitting at the table and you played a hand badly? And the game is continuing, of course. Hands are coming out. You're looking at your cards. You're playing those.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't getting anything, fortunately, so I was just mucking it. But for the next 20 minutes, I was going over that hand. It's like, I screwed up here. I screwed up here. I screwed up here. I counted three places where either I should have gotten away from the hand, as Joe said, not played it. You know, I got $10 in the pot.
Yeah. Twice over, you know, even coming in with the ace-jack possibly as a trapping deal because you know he's going to raise it. And now you're involved. I would then have re-raised there and won it right there.
Mm-hmm.
And now if you get massive resistance, you know, then you got to trust your read or not and just let it go. But I think right there is your spot. You know, and the other thing is, though, too, that everyone does exactly like we talked about at the beginning of this segment. They remember the hands they lost, and then it's magnified. Oh, I played this bad or this and that or I got unlucky. But the other six that you trap this wild bluffing type player and he bluffs off all his chips to you and you induce him to bluff, you say, oh, I played that one good. Okay, great.
Right.
And you just won 700 off the guy.
Yeah, you don't think about that. The one where you slow played a set, trapped a guy completely and took his stack.
And he's drawing dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's
right.
drawing dead. So you don't really remember those. Those are just great poker and I played good.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, you got a little unlucky for sure. The guy hit his hand. You know, I really would go back to the pre-flop. And, Dennis, you're spot on with after the flop and raising. You know, I'd say Dennis is right. I do play a little more trappy. I love getting people to bluff when I have a hand. But it wasn't a monster hand. You know, you really just had the jack with the ace kicker, which is a good hand.
Yep.
It's not a monster. Against him, it's kind of a monster, but not really.
Well, I want to thank you both for confirming what I have been saying in my head.
Okay, but now let's not beat up Paul on this thing, because Paul plays better by far than the average player. He's picking out one hand, and we're nitpicking through
it. I don't think
you
really played it that bad.
That's what I mean. You
That's
did not
point.
Play it that
well,
bad.
I would have played
the
I
results
have the same
were bad.
Way, Paul.
Thank
but,
you.
You know,
I wouldn't have played a pre-flop the same way, but the rest of it I might have played the same way and try to get him to bluff into me, and then I'm like, darn it, you know, I should have done this.
Well, again, there's 20 different styles of play. I guarantee that Joe and I don't play every hand the same way.
Yep.
We respect each other's game and the way we do it, and I can definitely see the way Joe would have played it. But you know, just because your style is a little different than ours doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no 100% right way to play hands.
Well, the good news for me was I had a good session, a big winning session. This was the one hand that I looked back on and I said I screwed it up. And if I can have a good session and look back and only have one hand that I screwed up, and it wasn't for my stack...
Yep.
Then, in the long run, I came home with more money than I went in with, and okay, it was pretty good in the long run.
Cool. That's good.
That's all there is. This is the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris. He's Dennis Phillips. He's Joe the Poker Coach McGowan. We are on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. And don't forget, if you miss any of our shows, you can always catch up to all the podcasts by going to Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And we'd love to hear from you by email. You can tell us about your hands that you played, questions about where you thought maybe you screwed up, or you heard a story from a friend and he screwed up, or she. You can email those to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com.
This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net. If you want to play with me, guys, get on the computer, download the program, and let's start playing. PokerStars.net. Find the Poker Stars in you, because whether you're playing at the beginning level or the pro level, whether you're playing anytime during 7 days a week, anytime day or night, any kind of game, PokerStars.net, that's the place to be. If you want to learn the game and learn it well and play with me down at the World Series, go to PokerStars.net. That's the place.